Have you thought about Lucky Peach magazine at all since we last talked?
No, actually, I haven't even, never even crossed my mind. I did not go and look to see which issues I have.
It was, it had just, like, I hadn't thought about it in some time, but it just jumped into my head after our conversation about Jonathan Gold, because I remember that he contributed to several of them. And I looked at the two, I only have two hard copy issues.
Right.
It's like issue 4 and issue 9. And he's written, okay. He has pieces in both of those. And then I was like, I just had kind of forgotten that Lucky Peach magazine existed. And yeah, flipping through it again, and it's cool.
Yeah,
and I wish there was something like it now.
Stuff in there, yeah.
Yeah. And I was also especially interested because I was like, I only have the two hard copies. I don't know how much you can read online, but I was wondering if there was, if it had been collected and republished as one set. And I don't think it has, but if you go on...
Yeah, I mean, you'd think they would do that.
Yeah, like, and obviously it would be, there's some challenges to that because it was, there was lots of artwork and drawings, and there was sometimes like weird fold out or like cut out pieces. Like it was like a, had these kind of quirks, like a Beatles album almost. It was like,
right.
Yeah. So I don't know how you put that in a book, but I think there were 24 issues in its 6-year run or whatever. And yeah, if you have all 24, you can sell them for a cool G online. People will pay $1,000 for it.
For the whole set.
Yeah.
I wonder how much that weighs.
Huh. I think you could lift it.
You think it would? Yeah. It's probably like, what, 12 pounds? Maybe less. It's probably less than 12
Maybe.
Pounds.
I'll weigh my, I'll, do you want me to go get my scale or no?
I kind of want you to, but that would be stupid. I don't even know why I'm curious, but I just, yeah, I don't know.
That can be follow up next week.
Yeah, sounds good. I don't know. I don't collect a lot of books or magazines because I think I have like a, I don't know, an aversion to having to move them around if I move house, which is kind of silly. I mean, there are heavier things than books for sure, but
yes. Well, I want to go to Knifeware or something and see what all the young kids, the kid cooks are reading these days now that they don't have, do they read it? They just look at TikTok probably, but.
Yeah, I don't know if, I was in Knifeware like about a week and a half ago, and yeah. There were several books, but I don't remember seeing any like, I don't remember
rock
seeing any
food
like
zines.
Food magazines or anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No punk rock food magazines.
Maybe there's a niche that needs to be filled there.
Yeah, maybe. You stepping up to the plate, Alan?
We're going to talk about that a little bit, actually. But first... Welcome to Food Court. I'm Alan Sudeby, and I'm here with my buddy, Shale McDonald. Hi, Shale.
Hey, Alan.
We're two chefs in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. We love food, and we love to talk about it.
Maybe, I don't know, maybe there's a way we can get young cooks to start listening to food podcasts.
That would be a lot easier. Or it'd be a lot less work if they would just listen to this. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, exactly. If only. You've kind of like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to continue with this conversation until I go look for my Lucky Peaches.
Okay. Wait a minute. Are they like in a box in the basement or?
I don't think they're in a box. I think they're on a shelf, but it's not in this room. So I'm going to have to just give me like 2 minutes. I'll be right back. Well, that was a bust. I'm sorry.
It could be...
I'm sorry, listeners. I'm sorry to make you wait for such a long time while I popped my head downstairs. They are on the shelf that I thought that they were on, but the bottom part of the shelf is difficult to access right now. Oh. And I couldn't really see what I was grabbing. And I was only able to find three issues.
Oh, okay.
And none of them are the ramen issue, which I know that I have. So right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. That'll have to be more follow-up, I guess. Which lucky yeah. peaches do I have? Which ones do you have?
Four. Issue four, which was called... It was the American food issue.
Okay, and yeah, I remember that one.
Issue nine, which was the... it was the second so-called cooks and chefs issue. Like, they had some... I don't... To me, they were all kind of like this, but they had some that were specifically earmarked for cooks, professional cooks and chefs.
Yeah. You have cooks yeah. and chefs number two?
Yeah, which is issue nine, but it's called cooks and chef number two.
Green cover. Yeah, I have yeah. that one. I have also issue number eight, and I don't even know what this one is. Street food, but I don't know what number it is. And then one of these has like, yeah, a little pullout, like you said, called Guts.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a little zine that's included inside with the magazine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe there's an episode there. I'll try and dig through and find all my lucky peaches this week.
Yeah. Flip through, share some good stuff.
Yeah, totally.
The other magazine that I used to kind of collect was one called Noble Rot. It's still, yeah, that one is still published, oh, yeah. But it's a wine.
That's a wine one, I guess.
Yeah. And I have the second, I noticed that almost all of the issues are like of the original run are sold out on their website. I do have the second ever issue of Noble Rot, which maybe someday some wine nerd will pay me a whole bunch of money for.
Yeah,
maybe.
First printing. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Are you keeping it in a Mylar?
No, I should. No.
I also, there was a stack of magazines there, and I had an old Bon Appetit magazine in that pile. And there was also an issue of a magazine called Fool.
Oh, yeah?
You ever read that? It's like a food magazine.
Familiar, but
no, it had like really cool black and white food photography. Most of the covers, I think, were black and white. Mm-hmm. And I don't exactly remember, but I sort of think like that each issue was sort of focused on a specific chef or something.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, like maybe there was more stuff in it than that. But like one, like each issue was sort of had like a focus around a chef or something.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah. I think okay. I only have a couple of them, but I remember liking that one too.
Okay. I'm going to look into it.
Yeah, maybe that one's still around. I don't think so.
Speaking of print media.
Oh my God, what a great segue, Alan.
Oh, thank you. Do you want to know what we're going to talk about tonight?
Absolutely.
Okay. So we're going to talk about pizza, but what actually is going to happen is... kind of riding high from our investigation and conversation regarding Jonathan Gold. I was thinking about, oh, sorry. And also we've mentioned casually that I edit a community newsletter called the McKernan Messenger. Right. And so I had this, I'm going to try starting a little food column in the McKernan Messenger.
Since you're the editor, who's going to stop you at?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And so I drafted one, a first piece, and it's about pizza, and I wanted to share that with you.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Get your thoughts, and then I imagine we'll end up just talking about pizza a lot. Even outside of the context of that article, but first, okay. So I would love for the food column to have a cute name or a clever name.
Oh yeah.
Like counterintelligence.
Right.
And I don't know tell me what you think of this. Is this dumb?
Okay. Do you have more than one brainstorm? I like, first off, it's, I think we know from like our own history of trying to name things that like it's very unlikely that whatever name you wind up with isn't going to be from Lisa.
Right. That's true. Yeah. Yeah. My partner.
But anyways, Lisa, go ahead, run it by me.
Just so everyone knows, my partner Lisa is basically a professional business and brand naming expert.
Yeah. Well, amateur maybe, but.
She's been paid to do it.
Oh, well,
does that count? Oh,
I guess
just
so, yeah.
Just to give you a little taste, like we had friends who were starting a dog training business, and Lisa came up with the name. It's called K911.
Oh, man, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, she also basically came up with the name of this podcast.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, is this dumb? What if it's, and this is like partly an homage, but maybe it's just, maybe it's confusing, but what if it were counterculture instead of counterintelligence? So it's a nod to gold, but then maybe, is it confusing because it doesn't, I mean, it would be something like counterculture, where to eat in Skåne district, like, because it's a community newsletter.
Yeah. Yeah. It would have a subtitle.
Yeah.
I like it. But I do have a problem with it, and I'll try to explain what that problem is now.
Okay.
The problem, I think, is that, like, even counterintelligence, mm-hmm. while I think it's clever, it, like, didn't immediately, for me, knowing that Gold's writing was about food, I was mm-hmm. able to sort of like unpack the pun that he was using.
Yeah.
But I think I'm not positive, but I think like because the column, his column Counterintelligence, was when did he start publishing? In the 90s or something?
I think in 86, I think.
Oh, so yeah. Tell me if you like, this is just sort of my own headcanon for why that name may have made more sense then and potentially to him and his readers mm-hmm. is that I think there's a lot more eating that you do at a counter maybe in LA than there is in Edmonton.
Right.
You know, like,
yep. Oh yeah. Like even the term lunch counter.
And so for me
like
being an Edmontonian, sorry, go ahead.
Well, just like even like the idea of a lunch counter, like a luncheonette, like a lunch counter, I think is not very widely known now. It's something that is more of my parents' generation, I think. Like even that term and that style of service and everything.
Exactly.
I can see it being problematic. Yeah.
And so the word counter is kind of distanced from food, I think, quite a bit. And maybe not so much in LA, but definitely I feel like in Edmonton, there's very, you know, like the... people don't think of eating at a counter all that much. Although, I don't know. I do like that it pays homage to Jonathan Gold.
Yeah. and I just don't want it to be like the hungry foodie or something. Like, but I haven't spent very much time thinking about it, but I'll throw it out there to anyone who has a great idea.
Clearly there are a lot of really bad directions it could go in. Have you talked to Lisa about it at all?
No,
not yet.
No.
Yeah. Well, listeners, if you have any great ideas, I like counterculture. It would sort of be dependent on the subtitle. Communicating what it was actually about would sort of be dependent on the subtitle. Mm-hmm. There's got to be a good. You gotta come up with like a catchy slug line, I guess.
Yeah. I've got time to think about it. This will be we take a summer break. And so the next issue is coming out in September. So I've got a couple of weeks. That's what I have on my draft right now.
Cool.
So yeah, the idea is that it's a newsletter for people who live in McKernan, but there's really only a handful of food service operations in the neighborhood. So it will be broader. Like I think I will expand it to, it could be anywhere in Edmonton, I guess, but it'll maybe be focused like on the Skåne district, like Old Strathcona and stuff, like all along White Avenue and whatnot. Can I read the draft or Are we going to read
it? Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Or just read it?
That's a good question. Maybe I fear that if we try to do it piecemeal, we'll you're going to read like the first section and then we're going to talk about that forever. And then we're going to get to the end and not have time to talk about the latter things.
Right.
So yeah, okay. I think maybe, yeah, just read it. And then maybe we can talk about the piece of writing and then we can talk about the pizza after.
Okay, sure. Okay. And there's a lot of kind of, if you're in the know, a lot of callbacks to our Jonathan Gold conversation, but here we go. So counterculture, where to eat in Skåne
district. Before you go, Alan, sorry. This is probably going to be putting you on the spot, but how are you feeling about it? How are you feeling about this piece of writing before we hear it?
As a first draft, I'm very happy with it.
Okay, so this is your first draft, you would say. Okay.
Yes, it's the yes, that's right. Okay. Is that it?
That was it. Oh, okay. I just wanted to get your impression. Just wanted to get your, I wanted to get your sort of rough assessment of like for, how you're feeling about it.
For a first draft, so like it covers exactly what I want and it's the right word count that I can fit onto a one page spread in the newsletter.
Ah, perfect.
And yeah, it can definitely, I need to go through it with a comb a bit and straighten out some language, but I'm pretty happy with it.
Cool.
Okay. So tentatively called Counterculture, Where to Eat in Skåne District. And then we're going to start with a pizza walking tour. And here's the piece. Great food critics are supposed to visit a restaurant multiple times before publishing a review, allowing them to taste the full menu and evaluate the consistency of the food and service. By this criterion, I can think of no other set of restaurants I am more qualified to write about than our local pizza shops. While there's only one in McKernan proper, we live a short walk or bike ride from some of the best and most distinct pizzerias in the city. Let's start with our local shop, Campus Pizza. My first taste of Campus Pizza was shortly after I moved out of Lister Hall and into a basement suite in McKernan. 20 years on, it's probably the one restaurant that I've eaten from the most in my entire life. Campus makes classic North American pan pizzas with consistently and uniformly crispy bottoms, concentrated, herbaceous tomato sauce, and generous toppings. Over the last couple of years, Campus has introduced signature pies, novel concoctions like pierogi pizza, donera pizza, taco pizza, and these are all fine, though there's little that can dissuade me from their classic pepperoni with its subtle heat and fennel flavor. The current owners have extended Campus Pizza's hours late into the night, 3 a.m. on Saturdays, a major boon to McKernan's student population and our other night owls. A short walk north in Garneau, you can get the best New York-style pizza in the city, bar none. Sepp's is unique in Edmonton in many ways. It's strictly takeout, and actually there isn't even an inside space for customers to access. You just walk up to a window on the south side of Ace Coffee. Orders must be placed online. You can't even call them in. With the exception of a puffy, chewy crust, New York pies are thin, wide, and flat as a bedsheet. Sepp's crust is ultra-thin, but consistently, persistently crispy. It's almost miraculous how such a thin layer of bread can remain so crisp while in contact with sauce and cheese. Toppings at Sepp's are Nuovo Italian, so expect descriptions like prosciutto cotto instead of ham. My favorite Sepp's pie is the Apulia, with spicy soppressata and jalapeno balanced by a sweet honey drizzle. Sepp's might be the most expensive pizza in Edmonton on a dollars per gram measure, but there's nothing else quite like it within a day's drive. Hydo, Detroit-style pizza, occupies an awkward retail segment of Calgary Trail that I haven't thought much about since the Billingsgate Seafood Market closed. It moved here after rapidly outgrowing its first location in Garneau, where the owners had previously operated three Boers. The conversion of Boers to Hydo was perhaps the smartest and most successful COVID pivot in the Edmonton restaurant scene. The hallmarks of Detroit-style pizza are a thick crust, a rectangular shape, and cheese that's sprinkled right to the very edge of the pie. Along the edges where the cheese meets the pan, there's a crispy lip of lacy, caramelized cheese that brings a small universe of texture and savory flavor to the pizza. These are hefty pies. In most circumstances, one pie will comfortably feed two, especially if you tack a tahini Caesar salad onto your order. The Hydo menu is built around novel pizza flavors. There's a Korean pie with kimchi, a pierogi-esque pie with potato, bacon, garlic, and dill. The closest you'll come to safe flavors is, quote, the classics never go out of style, which is a fairly classic pepperoni pizza augmented with grana padano and oregano. They use a mysterious thin diameter pepperoni that consistently forms a cup when baked, with a small amount of delicious pepperoni grease pooling in the center. Once a novelty, Donair pizza has become a fairly common offering in Edmonton, but High Do's Donair Don't Care is almost certainly the best take in the city. The spiced Donair meat is ground instead of sliced. The white sauce is super sweet, but balanced by the acidity and piquancy of pickled jalapenos. Back in Garneau, Rosso Pizzeria serves the original pizza style of Naples, Italy. This is hand-stretched dough with lovely, large, irregular bubbles that blister and burn in the intense heat of a wood oven. The sauce is essentially just crushed San Marzano tomatoes, and the cheese and toppings are sparse, letting the crispy, chewy dough shine. Rosso does do takeout, but as the only sit-down pizza joint in the area, what I appreciate most is that here you can turn a pizza into an entire evening. Start with a Negroni and olives or roasted cauliflower, then order a cold Peroni or a frothy Lambrusco to enjoy with your pizza. Finish the meal with a small affogato, and you'll be more than satisfied. Here endeth the reading.
The end. Wow, I'm hungry now, Alan.
You know those places? You eaten at those places?
Almost all, except for campus.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, we'll have to fix that.
Yeah, maybe. I wonder, can I like order from Campus Pizza on like an app of some kind?
Yeah, they're on Skip, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if they deliver to my area. I haven't ordered pizza in a while. Maybe I should do that. Okay. Couple of things.
Yeah.
Luckily I was able to read this over a couple of times before we started recording.
Right.
So I was able to formulate some thoughts. Thing number one, I think it's very evocative and appetizing writing with like a real sort of like, I think it really does a good job of like representing, I don't know, it's hard to say because I know you so well, but I think it does a really good job of representing your voice and like the man, I don't really know how to say this, but like, it sounds much like you in real life. It sounds authoritative, but not like you're trying to over-explain something to someone, right, or something.
Okay.
It's authoritative, but it gives the reader the benefit of the doubt in terms of having their own set of knowledge about these places or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I really liked it. If I have maybe a critique, it's that I don't know if you just like personally super in love with High Do right now, but it seems like High Do has like twice the word count of any of the other places in there. Not that it's not deserving. I mean, I also love High Do, but it does seem like I would say like maybe what a third of the article is about High Do, and then
yeah, it does. Like it probably has twice the word count of Seps. Anyways, yeah,
right, yeah.
Maybe I was eating their Donair pizza while I was writing.
I knew it. That's funny.
It's really good. It's really good.
Yeah, I haven't had it. In fact, oh no, I have had more than one thing from High Do. But I've only had their pizza like maybe four times or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely two of those times it was pepperoni and pineapple.
Oh, which, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Which they don't have on their menu, but you can add toppings to your pizza.
Really? It's not on their menu?
Well, like ham and pineapple is, or they did for a while have a ham and pineapple.
Oh, sorry.
Pizza.
I understand. Yeah, I get it. Yeah. Yeah.
Which, well, I don't know if I should say this. because I don't want to make any enemies, but like I really love pepperoni and pineapple pizza. It's like one of my favorites. Like if I have to choose something, I like all kinds of pizza. I like, yeah, pizza with just about any toppings that you can imagine.
Except chicken, right?
Well, I mean, I'll eat it. I don't necessarily love chicken. I don't personally feel like chicken belongs on pizza, especially paired with barbecue sauce. It really grinds my gears. Mm-hmm. But I'll eat a piece of pizza that has chicken and barbecue sauce on it and enjoy it. You know, like I would rather be having, I don't know, a piece of pizza with feta and spinach on it than a piece of pizza with chicken on it. But
I don't even know if you remember this, but I used to order pizza in for staff meal sometimes if we were celebrating something or whatever. And you went on one of my favorite Shale rants. You just would not stop harping on the fact that I had ordered a pizza with chicken on it. And you were harping on me. And then Mike came in and was making fun of me for ordering from Pan & Go instead of Domino's. And I was like, I'm never ordering pizza for this group again.
And lo, you didn't.
Yeah. Anyways, pepperoni and pineapple. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah. So pepperoni and pineapple is like one of my favorite pizza combinations, even though it's like obviously like I don't know. It's like in no way a classic. It's in no way like and it's also like very simple. You know, it's just like a real, I don't know. It's a real simpleton's pie, but I really like it. Mm-hmm. And, but like half the time, but it seems to me, just like from conversations that I've had with people, it seems to me that like, maybe it's slightly controversial or something. Like people think it's weird to put pineapple on their pepperoni pizza or something like that.
Right. Well, the pineapple thing is problematic.
Right.
Just generally, yeah,
like,
right?
There's a group of people who don't like pineapple on their pizza. And I can understand that. I think maybe when I was younger, I didn't really love pineapple on pizza either to begin with. But I don't know, somewhere along the way, I don't know. I didn't get tricked into it. I just fell in love with it.
Right.
But I think that like pineapple with pepperoni is even better than pineapple with ham, because I think I've ranted about this on the podcast before, actually.
Because pepperoni is better than ham.
So. Well, yeah. And it's like a little bit spicy and then the pineapple's sweet. And I just, I really like it.
Yeah.
But like, I also, when I order it from like a place like Hido or a place like Sepp's or something like that, I kind of also get a kick out of the idea that maybe the person who's taking and or preparing the order is like, pepperoni and pineapple, who orders this?
But you haven't, no one's given you grief about it, like to your face? This is just you?
No. Oh, okay. No one's given me grief about it to my face. Although, the first time I think the first time I tried to order it from Hido, it was a little bit like, there was a bit of confusion. Like they were like, no way, that's what you're asking for.
Right. But then, like they called you to clear, to confirm.
I think, or something. Yeah. Like maybe I placed my order in the app or something, I was having trouble placing my order in the app. It was like near the beginning. And so you could like, I think you could place an order. Maybe they weren't even doing apps at that point. Maybe I think you just had to call and like ask for a pizza to be delivered at a certain time or something. Like, and they could only make it a certain number a night or something. It was like in the first few months that they were open. And they had, I'm sure because like they were being attacked by people who wanted their pizza, they had kind of a Byzantine sort of like procedure that you had to go through in order to order pizza from them. You had to like call early and then, you know,
reserve
like you might pie for whatever time or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Like you might have to call hours in advance kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think when I called, I asked if they could, you know, make me a pepperoni pizza, but then put pineapple on it. And I think at first they were like, no, we can't do that. And then I was like, oh, right. You sure? Like,
well, like, okay, so this is what pizza menus used to look like, Shale. You probably remember this. It used to be number one, pepperoni. Number two, pepperoni and mushrooms. Number three, pepperoni and green pepper. Number four, pepperoni, green pepper, mushroom. And it was just every possible combination and permutation you could get of all of their ingredients, but they spelled them all out like that. Or they would just list the 20 toppings that they have and you pay a dollar or two a topping. But Sepp's and Hydor, like, these are bespoke pizzas, right? Where it's like, these are our signature pies. This is how we want to serve them. And so you don't have, but they are quite responsive. Like when you put notes on your order, like for instance, the Sepp's, I think they call it their Canadian, their version of ham and pineapple. They call it their Canadian.
Okay. That's interesting.
And my kids like ham and pineapple, but there's also jalapeno on the Sepp's version. So I have to get that taken off, and Cora doesn't like cheese. And so we get it without any kind of cheese. Mm-hmm. And you just work it all out in the notes, and they've never messed it up. It's been great every time. So
that's cool. Anyways, I get a kick out of ordering it.
Yes.
That's a long way of saying I get a kick out of ordering it, because I think I get a little kick out of the idea that maybe the person on the other end is like, ugh, this sounds gross.
Don't knock until you try it.
Yeah. Anyways, that was sort of a derailment. After reading the piece on the podcast, how are you feeling about it?
Pretty good. It's good. It's kind of, it's hard to really channel that distinct voice that we were, that Gold had, that we were talking about, where it's like going in with no prejudgment and like trying to, it's hard, especially in the context of a community newsletter. I found myself, and because of like just, you know, having read food writing in local papers for decades, it's hard to not default into the like cheery boosterism or savage put down kind of like there's like just these modal these modes of writing about local restaurants that it's hard not to like write cliches and stuff. It's really hard.
Yeah. I found that most of the article was pretty cliche free. I also felt like what you had to say, I mean, aside from campus, which I have no prior experience with, like I definitely felt like your like what you chose to say about each spot was very representative of, you know, what its actual strengths and or weaknesses are. Because I mean, I totally agree that, you know, Sepp's feels very expensive, you know, for like every time I order it, I'm like, and I don't order it very often because of that, even though you're right. It's like a great representation of New York style pizza. It's like it's shocking that we have that here in Edmonton, like, cause it's a shockingly good version of that. And I've rarely had it I've had it at like several events where they brought us like, you know, a bunch of pies and they were delivered and they got there and they were still crispy and like hot. And good pizza.
I can understand it being crispy when it's fresh out of the oven, but it's persistently crispy in the box. And I don't even understand. Yeah. If you look at the bottom of the pizzas, they have like this kind of very fine lattice work that's been like imprinted by the pan that the dough is baked on.
Right. Yeah. It's like it's like a perforated pan.
Yeah. That must be part of the, it's like using a perforated silk pack kind of, like it's supposed to help with airflow and stuff, but it's great. But yeah, really, really expensive. And like I said, probably the most expensive pizza per gram in Edmonton.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it sucks because I really like it, but I honestly feel like I'm getting ripped off when I buy it.
Right.
Which is unfortunate because I would love to buy it more. I would love, you know, it's, I don't know. It's weird. It's like, I wouldn't say that it's, I don't know. This is weird, but like, you just can't get that here. And so it's like worth extra money to be able to get New York style pizza of that quality in the city. Mm-hmm. It's just that, like, when you're in New York, it's like the cheapest meal you can have.
Right. Yeah. But not generally this good. Like, I mean, you know,
there's a kind of utility grade
New York pizza that is on every street corner that is just not the same.
But there's also like really good New York style pizza that is also in the same price bracket. Like not every pizzeria that you walk into in New York is going to have like pizza that's as good as Sepp's.
Right.
Agreed. But, you know, there are several that do, and it's not like the price is like twice. It's mm-hmm. not like the price is double every other pizzeria in the city or whatever. Mm.
That's another interesting thing. Like, I had that kind of short list of other characteristics of Gold's pieces that we never got to in the last conversation, but I can't think of a single time that he mentions price. there's a couple really high end or like whatever kind of like businessman steakhouse places where maybe he alludes to it, you know, being expensive, but he's never really like, it was interesting because the pieces in Counterintelligence, they aren't actually as like each individual one isn't actually as comprehensive as a typical restaurant review would be in a newspaper. Because usually if someone's writing about a restaurant, they're going to check all of these boxes where they're telling you about the space, about the service. They're probably going to describe one thing from each section of the menu, like an appetizer, a main or whatever. But Gold just kind of like cherry picks a few things, and he won't necessarily tell you everything that's on the menu or whatever. It's just like, finding some little tidbit that he wants to share with you.
Totally. The thing that inspires him.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is cool.
Yeah. The thing that like gets under his skin that he's like, can't stop thinking about and then wants to write the piece about, you know?
Right. Yeah, totally.
I think the piece maybe could use like a bit of a conclusion too. It sort of has an intro, you know, it sort of has an intro. Like, this is what I'm talking about. Like, I'm going to talk about several places that are within walking distance. It would be nice if there was like, just one or two conclusory sentences that, you know.
Yeah. The ending right now is really weak. It's like, you'll be more than satisfied. That's like, that's one of the big cliches that needs to be changed in that piece. I wonder if it can be tied back to the idea that you're walking around visiting these places. But point taken, I agree.
Totally. But yeah, I think it's a great piece. I think it's a really good start to a column. Do you have any other ideas for like how you can do, because like you said, it's a little bit challenging, right? Because there aren't a ton of restaurants right in McKernan. So do you have some other sort of like restaurant grouping ideas that you can?
I think they won't all be. Do you mean like how there's four pizzerias in this one? Grouping
or something do you have other ideas that sort of like tie, like that are like a conceptual tie-in for like a few restaurants that are nearby or something like that?
Not really. The short list of the next pieces I'd like to do are all individual restaurants, but they could be. So one of them, I think I've mentioned this in conversation, this place called Mukcha Korean Street Food. And
I don't think you named it to me.
Is that right?
I'm not sure. Yeah.
It used to be called It Dog. So it's right beside Remedy on 9th Street by the university.
Right. Yeah, totally. Oh, I didn't realize that. Is it owned by the same people? Or?
I think so. Yeah. Cause it's the same, I need to talk to someone there to confirm, but I'm pretty sure that even on their social media, like it said, like we're changing the branding, but they still, even as It Dog, they were focused on hot dogs and fried chicken, and they still are.
Yeah.
It's more like Korean corn dogs and fried chicken. But they've just bulked it out to have more Korean stuff. Like you can get kimbap and tteokbokki and stuff like that.
Oh, geez, I should stop by there.
It's good. It's really good. And the only idea, if that were, I haven't written it yet, so I don't know if it like, I probably could write a whole piece just on that place, but if it were to become a Korean street food or Korean junk food kind of like you could bring up Steel Wheels and other places like that. So
yeah Yeah, there's also like a food truck in the city. I think it's a food truck. But I don't know. Maybe it's like a chain now or something, called Gangnam Street Food. That is like, yes, also, yeah.
It's in a lot of mall food courts, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where was I recently? I think the South Gate, or maybe it was in West Ed. But anyways, yeah, I've seen that in malls for sure.
And they have one in Kingsway Mall too, which
is
near my house. So I've seen it in there a few times. I've had some food from there. It was decent, honestly.
Oh, is there? Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I do like, I think this is a good first one because it's accessible. It's pizza and it does talk about a business that's actually in McKernan. The other shops that are in McKernan, I need to visit more before I write about them. Like there's a pretty good Indian restaurant called Coriander Cuisine, which I've been to a handful of times. But I feel like their menu is so large and they do have like some specific like regional specialties that I would want to try and dig into a bit more and try a few more times before I write about it. But
yeah, I feel like they're are a few restaurants that used to be in McKernan that like closed during the pandemic. Is that true? Or,
you know what? No. So I think like Campus has been around for decades. And it closed during the pandemic and then reopened under new ownership. That Coriander Cuisine, opened a few years before the pandemic and is still around. And the only other, so Coriander Cuisine is where Enzo's on 76 used to be. It was Tremici before that. So it went through for a couple decades. It was an Italian. The only other, so technically most people think this is in Belgravia, but that block west of the McKernan Belgravia LRT station, is technically actually McKernan. And there's a,
Belgravia.
There's a cafe there that makes pretty good laminated pastries. Like their croissants are pretty good. Not like Duchess good, or Eleanor and Laurent good, but pretty good.
Oh, that's cool.
And then there's also that, Belgravia Hub restaurant, which is also in McKernan, but technically, but yeah. And those are the only
McKernan Hub doesn't sound as good or something.
Well, I don't know, people, because of the way they developed 114, we're turning into a city planning podcast now.
Oh yeah. Geez. Whoops.
Because of the way they developed 114th Street and the LRT line, people think that that's the divide between the communities, but it's not.
Right.
McKernan extends a few blocks west. Yeah.
Makes sense. What about Park Allen? That's pretty close to McKernan too. Are you going to cover stuff that's in there?
Well, originally this piece was going to also have Pink Gorilla Pizzeria, which is in Park Allen.
I was wondering about that glaring omission.
But actually it's closed. Did you know?
Oh, well, I was going to ask you about that. I thought I maybe had heard that, but I wasn't sure.
So their original location, which was in the old Park Allen restaurant spot.
Right.
On 109th Street. They have closed there and they've reopened a Pink Gorilla downtown, but it doesn't serve pizza.
Oh.
It's like Pink Gorilla Pub or something like that.
Weird.
Yeah. And I don't know exactly.
Wow, they really love that name, hey?
Yeah. They're hanging on. But even though that was probably my least favorite pizza in the area, but it was also like, all these, the four shops that are mentioned in the article are just so different, well differentiated in terms of the kind of pizza they make. And
they all are very like, not just different from each other, but just like all have like a really strong concept, which is cool.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And Pink Gorilla, I don't know if you would call that a strong concept, but it is a very different style of pizza from these other four too. So in the original conception, that was going to be one of the places mentioned too, but it's not there anymore.
Yeah, that's too bad. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of cool little places in Park Allen, though. Like, there's that little street that's sort of like, where is it? Is it 110th or 111th or something?
Yeah, that's kind of like, it's kind of a rectangular bus loop around Park Allen School and the Park Allen Community League, right?
And exactly. And Annie Rue Ice Cream is in there.
Totally,
The Colombian Coffee House and stuff. Yeah.
That was such a surprise.
It's a neat little block.
The Colombian, because their original location is so like big and flashy and beautiful, but they've like gone into all these tiny spots, kind of like Elm, like back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
Gone totally into these really tiny spots. And yeah, as near as I can tell, are killing it. Like it's the best coffee around me for sure. The yeah. Colombian in Park Elm.
Yeah, I went in and had a coffee from there. Like I just happened to be driving by like a couple weeks ago, and I went in and had a coffee because I was like, oh, well, they're roasting their own coffee. I should try it out. Mm-hmm. And it was actually quite good. And I bought a bag of beans and yeah.
And did you stop in at Aniru to check out the competition or?
They were closed when I went, but I wanted to. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I didn't have time to wait around for them to open. So
yeah,
I still haven't been, but I want to go. I've heard it's really great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's excellent.
Yeah. Sweet.
There used to be a restaurant in that strip called Happy Garden that was around for many, many years, like a Chinese Canadian place.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
But no longer there.
No longer. Yeah.
So when you wrote that piece, were you like intending it to sound like gold? It feels very gold-esque to me. So I'm wondering like how intentional that was, like, or was it maybe not intentional, but just you were so soaked in gold when you wrote it that you just couldn't help?
I think so. Like more the latter, like it.
Yeah.
There's just, and I don't know, maybe it's just, I'm picturing it this way in hindsight, but even things like one of the most common ways for gold to start a counterintelligence piece is to describe the drive to the place. Cause he's right. always talking about drive. Like he's in Los Angeles and he's always driving miles and miles around the city.
Yeah. The he talks about which streets he had to drive up or whatever. To
yeah.
Get
and like which highway yeah. it's underneath and stuff like that. And so yeah, I was thinking about that when I mentioned that, Haido is on an awkward retail segment of Calgary Trail, because it's like just it's
oh yeah for sure
I was
yeah.
surprised to see Haido and then Modest Meats go in next door.
Right.
It was like that whole strip, like I drive by it almost daily and I just never think about the businesses there because I'm always on my way somewhere. Yeah. And there's not great parking and so, which is
no yeah parking there is really awkward, which I think is mm-hmm. the yeah it really yeah it's unfortunate because like there is like a long like and not that far from where they're located, like a little further up is like Paraiso Tropical.
Yeah.
And but everything that's on Calgary Trail there is just like not very accessible because it's a big street and you really have to be, you know, like you can't just like slowly drive by places and be like, oh, I should stop there.
Right.
You're like going 60 and you're in dense traffic and you're like, oh, what was the, jeez, I'm exactly. already past it, you know? Yeah. So I feel like it's a bit of an unfortunate location, but you know, for a place that mostly, I don't exactly know how well Modest Meats will do in there because, you know, like as a butcher shop, you kind of have to have people come in and look at the product or whatever.
Right.
But for a restaurant that does, I would imagine 85 or 90% of their business, as delivery doesn't really matter, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Location
and they're
wise.
Across the street.
I think
from
they just wanted to be able to have a bigger spot.
Oh yeah.
Right. Absolutely. Oh yeah. And there's a high school across the street. Yeah, that makes sense. Although it's kind of pricey pizza for high school students, but I imagine that they probably have like a cheap slice at lunchtime or something like that.
Totally.
Hey?
Yeah. They do. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that the driving was something that I was thinking about relating to gold. And yeah, some of the food descriptions specifically, I think I wrote differently having just gone through counterintelligence, like saying that New York pizza with the exception
is as flat as a bed sheet. Yeah, that was very gold-esque.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty good though. I kind of liked it. I like the idea of like wrapping myself up in a pizza. So
right. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Maybe that's why.
And I just like the it was not every single one, but a lot of his pieces, you get the very, it's very obvious that he's lived in Los Angeles his whole life. And so he'll make kind of fleeting references to like, go, you know, he and an ex-girlfriend used to go to this Cuban joint every Saturday and drink cold wine, or whatever it was. So I was trying to channel some of that too, with my mention of Lister Hall and the basement suites and stuff like that.
Yeah, so, totally.
Yeah.
Man, it's very, I don't know, it's funny. Like, I don't know what everyone's experience of McKernan is, but like, yeah, for me, like, yeah, it's very connected to the university.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's right there. And then, yeah, also it, because of that, like when I first moved out of my parents' house and was like moving in with friends and roommates in the city and trying to find work and potentially going to school and things like that. We were every place we looked at basically as a rental spot was like a basement suite in McKernan, yeah, or thereabouts. Yes. Like,
yeah,
you know, McKernan, Park Allen, maybe like, you know, a little bit closer to White Ave, or, you know, like, yeah, we wanted to be close to White Ave. We wanted to be close to the university. That's, and all of those neighborhoods are just filled with basement rental suites. And yes, so it's just like a very, I don't know, just hearing you talk about it was like, yeah, very nostalgic. But I don't know if everyone, I wonder, like the audience for the newsletter, like, are they, do you think that they're, a lot of the audience is like former renters in McKernan who are now landlords? Like, I wonder what the
that's a good question.
I wonder what, like, the percentage is.
A lot of people live in McKernan their whole life. I mean, like, from university age through adulthood.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would be surprised if I don't actually know. It would be a good, I should know the demographics better, but like, I doubt that universe, because I, like, when I was in university and living in McKernan, I didn't read the community newsletter. It was like, because it was an old person.
Yeah, no, thing. Yeah, exactly. I doubt a lot of students are going to be reading it.
For now.
Maybe the maybe the journalism students. They're, yeah, like,
exactly.
Maybe,
you know. Well, that's, yeah, and actually that's, again, not to turn this into like a municipal politics podcast, but like, that is a huge untapped thing in McKernan, is that, like, here, we've got a newsletter. There is surely students living in McKernan who write for the Gateway or like are studying journalism, yeah, no, or English. Like, how do I find them and get them to contribute to the newsletter to make it that much more interesting?
Alan, duh, what? Put an ad in the Gateway.
Hey, yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
it's not a bad idea. I don't know what that costs, but
I'm sure it's very affordable. Yeah, that's a good,
well,
idea.
And also, like, since the newsletter is like a volunteer run thing, like, maybe you can get a discount or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why it was crazy, like, with so many and you're right, like, all the students live underground, right? So you don't really, it's not like the students on White Avenue, like, the streets are still very quiet, but like, that's why I was so happy when Campus Pizza started staying open really late. Like, that's unheard, right, of in a neighborhood like McKernan for something to be open past midnight, even past 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Like,
totally.
It did cross my mind. I had two other, you were asking if there was any like restaurants that could be grouped and written about together in the same piece. I did have two possible ideas. One of, cool, them, did you know that there are two izakayas in Garneau? Did, what, you know that?
No.
There is Izakaya Hongdae, which is inside the H Mart in Garneau.
Oh.
And then one just opened in the last couple of months called Tansen Izakaya, right on White Avenue, just east of College Place. So.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, that's one idea.
I'm sorry. Where's the H Mart? This is bad.
The H Mart is on the main floor of College Plaza. So,
oh, okay.
112th Street, just north of White. It used to be a Sobeys, and now it's an H Mart. Right. And there's a little restaurant.
Yeah, I know exactly
there.
What you're,
besides,
talking about,
the, like, they have kind of lunch counters, like, where there's a ramen counter and I think a fried chicken counter and stuff.
Oh, geez. See, your name does make sense.
Yeah, exactly. but then there is, yeah, like a little seating area, and it's called Hongdae Izakaya.
Cool. And have you eaten there yet?
No, I have eaten at that Tansen place.
How was it?
It was okay.
Oh, it was okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll have to go again.
I mean, there's some pretty good izakayas in the city, so.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something that, like, when did Tomo, I feel like Tomo was the the trailblazer.
Yeah, Tomo was definitely like the spearhead for that. Mm-hmm. Tomo was the thin end of the wedge for Izakayas, and now we're filthy with them.
Yes. One other possible idea was tacos, with the thought of, because does this restaurant group have a formal name, but the folks who do Next Act, Meat, Pip, and Pals?
Oh man. I'm not positive. I think maybe it's the Next Act group, but I don't know. Yeah.
Whatever they're called. I love them. And they mm-hmm. opened where the original Pip location was is now Marlow Tacos.
Somebody told me about that, actually. I need to check that out.
I've been a couple of times. It's awesome. It's really, really delicious and really quick, like for lunch, like in and out, like the food comes like 5 minutes after you order it. But yeah, really tasty. So I was wondering if it could be like Skona District Tacos, and you could do Marlow on white, and you could do like the lunch counter in Paraíso Tropical, and like talk about the tacos or the empanadas and like yuca fries and stuff. Is there another taco place? There's tacos off white. Anyways, those are the only two other kind of combo pieces that I was thinking of.
Yeah, those are some good ideas. Those are good combos. So how often does the newsletter come out? Is it once monthly. Every 2 weeks or once a month? Monthly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And are you going to try and put a piece in it in each issue?
That's the dream. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm a little jealous.
Why?
Cause I wish I had like a forum where I could write a piece and publish it. That would be fun.
Well, you don't have to live in McKernan to contribute to the newsletter.
I suppose that's true. Although my like knowledge of the neighborhood is somewhat lacking. I feel right. I would be like a little bit of an imposter. But if I come up with an idea for a piece, I'll let you know.
Okay, perfect.
I mean, well, yeah, and it's not technically in McKernan, but maybe there's a piece for me to write about Annie Rue ice cream.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we could.
Interesting, right?
A Park Allen piece would be good, like because actually, like the Columbian has bought advertising in the McKernan Messenger and stuff. So just to do a little review, because that strip, you would have Annie Rue ice cream, the Colombian coffee roasters. And there's also a bakery there. Guess what it's called? It's,
I know. I saw it like a week and a half ago, but I can't remember. It's
Buns and Roses.
Oh, right. Have you had stuff from there? Because it was also closed when I was there, I think.
Oh, is that right? Think Lisa picked up something from there once, but honestly, I can't even remember what it was. So
remember what it was like.
Yeah, I'll need to do
more. I think the signage on the outside said that it's like whole grain breads or something like that. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. But okay, so I can't really comment on campus because I've never had it, but I will try to remedy that.
Okay.
Seps, I think. I gave a pretty good breakdown of my opinion of Seps. Great pizza. Just, I really wish it wasn't as expensive. Even though I understand, I think, why it is that way, I just still, just hurts.
Yep.
And then Haido is also great. I do feel like it's a little pricey, but I sort of feel a little bit more like you get what you pay for, because the pies are like, that's a lot of pizza you're getting.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's like it's maybe a little bit of a challenging upfront cost, but by the time you're done, it, you're like, oh yeah, that was worthwhile. And then Rosso, I haven't been to in a really long time, and I've only been a couple of times, but I really did enjoy the pizza the couple of times that I had it. Is it still the same? Is it still really good? Is it still like maybe one of the best Neapolitan pizzas in Edmonton?
Yeah, I would say so. And I'm not, I mean, who else makes that style now? Because even like, I know it's not even remotely the same league, but like even Famoso, to me, they don't really make the traditional Neapolitan anymore. It's like, I don't know. They've just like tripled the amount of toppings they put on. And it's just a soggy, soupy mess most of the time.
Yeah, it's really gone off the rails. Which, I mean, I guess you know, they really, like, it's a chain restaurant now, and they have a lot of locations, mm-hmm. and they have, you know, they serve a lot of different neighborhoods with a lot of different demographics. I can see why it's just not actually just, you know, trying to be good Neapolitan pizza anymore. But yeah, Rosso's still good.
Yeah. In terms of a sit down, like, nice meal, it's probably the mm-hmm. closest to being a regular that I've ever become anywhere. Like, it used to be where Lisa and I would go, like, for a date. And I would get just what I listed in the article. They're like, get a Negroni and a pizza and a Peroni and gelato. Yeah. And yeah. Yeah. Consistent. Well done. Yeah. I'll go to bat for it.
Sweet. Yeah. I should go back one time. Mm-hmm. How does it feel price wise?
Good. It's different. Like, because, so Seps is expensive.
Because you're having a sit down meal. It feels different.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You don't even get to enter the building when you go to Seps. You just shove it through the window at you. Right. So it's a different, like Rosso is.
Give
like,
me the
like
money.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so Rosso, because it's, we were usually going for a more protracted meal and an evening. So yeah, I can't remember the price points exactly, but I didn't feel ripped off. That's for sure.
Yeah. Cool. Do you ever get reader feedback from stuff that goes into the newsletter?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you, like, do people write letters, or is there like an email address that people can write to, or is there like a social media presence for the newsletter or something like that?
The feedback for the newsletter there's a, like, an editor's email that's posted email, in the contact section. So yeah, every once in a while, especially, it's usually like we have a community historian, for example, and they will like write a piece about the, what's an example, like recently they just interviewed someone who's lived in the neighborhood since the 50s. It's like someone in their 80s, and they attended University High School, which used to be in Corbett Hall, and they've lived in McKernan the rest of their life. And so they did, our historian just interviewed them to, like, just about their life in Edmonton, and she worked at the Journal for decades. And so those kinds of pieces will usually get some kind of feedback, just like, thanks for sharing that. That was sweet and touching and that kind of thing. Yeah.
Cool. Did the historian ask that woman what her favorite pizza in the neighborhood was? Or?
No.
Oh, well, I guess that's what you're there for.
If you, like, not in the McKernan, like, forget about the McKernan Messenger, your top three pizzas in Edmonton, or like... is there like a really notable pizza in town that deserves to be in this?
Shout it out.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like, Old Strathcona has like the highest density of, like, you know, really noteworthy pizza places.
Mm-hmm.
I used to really dig Tony's, mm-hmm. which is sort of like a north side old school North American style pan pizza gem.
Yeah.
And they also have like a New York style pizza that they serve there, I think.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, there's some restrictions around ordering it. I'm not quite sure. Like, maybe it's only available on certain days. I can't quite remember what the deal
you
is.
You have to be Italian.
But I've had some not that great pizza from Tony's in the last couple of years. And so I'm like, not sure about recommending it anymore, which is kind of unfortunate. But yeah, I used to really dig Tony's. And the other thing that I would like to shout out is, like, it's like the quality is not on the same level as like Seps or Hydo, but it's very consistent, and it's not just like regular, like, chain kind of pan pizza type of situation. It's a place called Panini's, and I think they do most of their food as takeout.
Mm-hmm. They've got a small seating area.
It's kind of in a weird spot. Yeah. It's in like the bottom of a high rise apartment building. They do have a small seating area in there. But like, I think 90% of their business, like, the kitchen takes up like 80% of the space. Like mm-hmm. they have like three tables in the front. It's like clearly an afterthought, I guess, maybe for people who live in that high rise apartment building that it's underneath or something, mm-hmm. like just so that people can come in and sit down and eat something if they want or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think like 90% of the business is takeout. And yeah, it's consistently like really good. I like order meatball pizza from there fairly often and it's mm-hmm. really good. Yeah.
That's actually the only one that I would like straight up say, yes, it's like, I recommend it. It's great. You should try it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, totally. Like it's not on the same level, but it is really good and it's very consistent. And I feel like in general, it feels like a really good deal to me. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it mm-hmm. feels like a good buy. Like you get good quality pizza that isn't just like cookie cutter, same as everywhere else pizza. Mm-hmm. And it's like also not necessarily going to break the bank.
Right.
So yeah, that's what I would say. Paninis would be my other recommendation.
I don't think I've tried, like there's lots of Italian places like Buco and Bianco that I mentioned that I haven't tried. I'm also curious to try, speaking of Famoso, so the big Famoso on White Avenue closed. I don't know if you knew that.
I did know that.
And so it's now called Arbor. And they still have the pizza oven and they have pizza on their menu. So I'm curious to try it and see what it's like.
Cool. Yeah. That's a hot tip. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I would say about pizza in Edmonton is there is still a lot of like the, I don't know, in one of our very first episodes, I like waxed poetic about Peter's Pizza in Spruce Grove.
Right.
Yeah, it's Peter's Steak and Pizza, exactly. And like, it's a style of pizza that is like very, I don't know if it's like, I mean, it's certainly not all over North America. I think I feel like it's like sort of like prairie oriented or like Midwestern or something. I'm not sure. It's like a thick pan pizza, but not like a Chicago deep dish style, but mm-hmm. sort of like a deep dish pan pizza with like a ton of toppings. Yeah. And like, I hate to admit it, but I'm kind of a sucker for royal pizza, even though it's bad, it's like sort of like this, the crystallization of like that style of pizza, like right. almost in a bad way. But if I really want to scratch the itch for like that kind of like, you know, cheap pan pizza with like a ton of like low moisture mozzarella on right. it or whatever from yeah. when I was a kid, that's usually my go-to which, you know, like doesn't happen very often. It's once every couple of years, but once every mm-hmm. couple of years, I'm like, yes, bring on the royal.
And you know what, that style, do you think that style is threatened? Is it because
I think that it's having a bit of a renaissance.
And
I've heard about a few like independent pizza places lately that are trying to replicate that style. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like there's a social media account, I think, in Edmonton, and I can't remember what it's called right now off the top of my head, which is unfortunate. Otherwise I'd shout it out. But like he does like food reviews of like kind of more, you know, diner style and lowbrow foods and stuff like that. And he's tried a bunch of those style of pizza lately and compared them and stuff mm-hmm. in the last few months. And I'm like,
are you talking about Brotherhood of Plates?
Oh yes, I am talking about Brotherhood of Plates. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I like that account. I think he calls himself a junk food connoisseur.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I've seen some of that style of pizza show up on that account recently. And I'm like, is this a thing? Like, is it coming back around? Has it wrapped around from being bad to being what people crave again or something? I'm not sure.
I mean, the style itself is not inherently bad.
Yeah.
I don't know if you would remember or if you think this is the same, but like to me, the pizza that the Garneau Pub and Plato's Pizzeria used to serve was kind of in that vein. And even...
Yeah, it's definitely in that style.
To come full circle, before Three Boars was Three Boars, that restaurant was called Happy Joe's Pizza, and they served, think, that style. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's why the kitchen at Three Boars had a pizza oven in it, even though it wasn't a pizza place.
And actually, my very first kitchen job, like first real kitchen job ever, was at the Turtle Creek Cafe, which I've said before. And we served pizza in that same style, only it was all like single pan style pizzas, right.
Yeah.
But it was also in that same style.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, that thick puffy crust with a ton of cheese on it. And like, we had some like interesting takes, I think, but like,
right.
It was basically like, yeah, pizza that you would get at Royal.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I'm curious to know if you think that campus, when you have it, it fits kind of in that vein too.
Oh man, I hope so, Alan.
Yeah.
I really hope so. Okay, I'm going to try it this week.
Yeah,
I'll let you know.
It's North America. It's pan pizza. It's like Pizza Hut, only it's like, Pizza Hut is much oilier, and the texture right. of the crust on Pizza Hut is like, it's like white bread. It's like so soft, very little chew. It's just like Wonder Bread. And
yeah.
Campus has much, much more texture than that. And is not oily.
Can't wait. Okay. We'll find out.
Okay, cool.
Thanks for listening to Food Court, a podcast recorded in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Food Court is hosted by Alan Sutterby and Shale McDonald. Theme music by Ryan and Shale McDonald. Make sure to subscribe to Food Court in Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or in your favorite podcast player. We love to hear from our listeners. Please drop us a line at feedback@foodcourt.fm or find us on Instagram @foodcourtpodcast. If you want to spread the word, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a fresh new episode. Thanks for listening.